Hello, everyone. It is Thursday, September 7th, 2023 at 12:33 p.m. This is a meeting of the Finance Committee of the Kensington Fire Protection District. So the Finance Committee members are myself, Julie Stein, and Director Watt.
Here,
present. Who's here? Our general manager, Mary Morris Mayorga, is with us, and we have two board members watching who know they're not allowed to speak. And one, you can laugh though. One member of the public so far. Two. Oh, okay. Oh, who's the other one?
Linda.
Oh, okay. Great. All righty. So, first item on our agenda is to take public comment items that are not on this Finance Committee agenda. If you have a comment on an item that is on our agenda, hopefully you can save it for that item so that we can address it. So see if there are any hands raised. There's not in the Q&A, but
that was Katie from before.
Okay, perfect. So our first item, Jim, is adoption of the consent items, which are approval of the general manager's timesheets from June 1st, 2023 through August 31st, 2023. The second is approval of the Finance Committee meeting minutes from June 6th. So we can approve this in one motion unless you'd like to discuss either of the items. With no discussion. And I agree. So I move that we approve both items.
Second.
Vote in favor of that. So. Okay, we have no old business, and so we'll turn it over to Mary to kick off the meeting with item A, which is a verbal report on the 2023 OPEB actuarial report.
So this is just an update. We most recently have the fiscal year 2021-22 OPEB actuarial report a couple of months ago, and that was completed for the audit that we had just, annual audit that we had just completed. So now getting ready for the fiscal year 2022-23 audit, we need the OPEB actuarial report information that filters into it. So we've actually started that process. We had contracted with the existing firm to do that, Nicolet Consulting. And so we had contracted with them a couple of years ago for 2 years. So we have this one in progress, and they'll be doing the actuary. We're way ahead of where we had been last time as far as getting it done. So I anticipate within another month or two, they should be done with this, and it'll probably coincide with when we have information on the annual audit. So we'll be in good shape there. So this was just the report, status report, to let you know where that is.
And just for anybody who's listening, to refresh any memories, the OPEB actuarial report relates to the post-employment benefits from our firefighters who were employed by the district before we contracted out.
Yes.
And so there's just a number of folks and or their family members who were continuing to pay their benefits.
Yeah.
As long as they're with us and eligible, and so forth.
And so the last time around, we were funded at about 187%. Yeah. So I don't expect that to change dramatically either direction. So that's very good.
And that's funded by the CalPERS Trust.
Yes.
And so that's what you're referring to.
Yes.
Is our trust is way ahead of
yes.
schedule,
which is very good. Not a lot of agencies are in that position.
Yeah. So, okay, great.
No.
Any comments from the public on that report? All right. Next, a verbal report on the 2022-23 annual audit.
So the annual audit, after we had the presentation from Justin with Munn CPAs month or two ago, he and I talked, and they're experiencing challenges with audit staff, kind of as we had encountered during the audit, but it continues. And in a lot of firms, they're having difficulty. So he did let me know, based on their availability and the kind of work that the district's audit takes, which it's pretty simplified, yet the conversion of the QuickBooks file to what they need for purposes of the audit takes more work. And so he, you know, we currently are at about 17,000, and he said that his estimate would most likely be $30,000. And, you know, he understands if we want to issue an RFP, he said he would, you know, send a proposal, but I think it would be worthwhile to issue an RFP. We've had them for 6 years, I believe. And, you know, he would take no offense to us doing that, to see if maybe we could get somebody at 20,000, you know, and any amount helps, but that would be my plan, is to issue an RFP and see what kind of responses we get.
That makes sense to me. Is that something you just, you have,
I can
already
do that.
Yeah,
I can do that. And I can bring it back to the next committee meeting. We can schedule one as needed if I can get responses pretty quickly, and then see how they compare to the estimate that Justin from Mont CPA has provided. And as far as timing to what, you know, what they could work into their schedule, because that's the other difficult part. Our auditors having time to schedule in new audits, which it's just crazy times.
Do you realistically think that we would get an audit for 20,000?
It's possible.
I'm saying just about in every field, the costs are just skyrocketing.
It's possible, and it's not all that difficult to issue an RFP. I have reports from way back that I can kind of
use. And hurt to ask.
It's worth trying. Mm-hmm. I know several agencies that went out for RFP, they really didn't get very many responses. So it's possible, but it's possible that we might need to take a look at our current. So it's just worth exploring.
Okay.
So I think this is a worldwide issue. You're seeing the same in Singapore. Number one, the audit costs going way up, even though they're like automating their process to make it more efficient, and just turnover of audit staff.
Yeah, I think it's personnel and student.
Well, I think that what I've been told anyway in that context is that, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for really sharp finance people, and that doing audit work is not their only shift. The private sector pays well. So that's just one perspective on it. The other thing, it's not really on the agenda today, but it's sort of related to what you said, and maybe if it's not appropriate to discuss it now, it could come back, but is there any way to get off QuickBooks? It seems like potentially the cost of getting into a more modern accounting system would close the gap between the cost of last year's audit and the increase. And plus, there's all those lingering transactional cleanup items that are QuickBooks artifacts, as I understand.
Well, when I talked with Justin, I actually asked him, because it seems, I mean, I'd be willing to get onto a new system, but for small agencies, there just aren't jumps in cost so much. I asked him, and he didn't really have any suggestions besides QuickBooks, but we can certainly look to see if anything else comes up, because it would be nice to get rid of that issue, but we're just so small. I'm not sure anything else would cost. We can look at that as part of it.
Sounds good. Okay. Any public comment on this agenda item before we move on? All righty. So now we get to the really interesting things. It's all interesting, but this is very interesting. So the public safety building budget revision, which is on page 24 of 95 packet. And Mary, why don't you, I wrote down some questions that I have, but why don't you walk us through this?
Good. Just share screen so we can see it too. Okay, so the public safety. Okay. All right, so we had talked about the public safety building budget, and the fact that we need to look at potential cost increases that we know have occurred and then kind of beef up the contingency for some of those unknowns that we seem to encounter. The project, of course, with an old building, we've come across unforeseen conditions, things that are, you know, not in the greatest of condition that we need to make better before we can move on with the project. So as we encounter those, we look at what the best way to proceed would be. So there have been unforeseen conditions and change order costs that we've had to incorporate. I've listed out the overall public safety building budget that we started with, and that was what we used for financing, and then took a look at a proposed revision where we've added in change orders, where we've really looked and tried to break out a little bit more. This one breaks it out a little bit more, but the next page detail that I'll go to breaks it out into even more detail. And with design and engineering, those costs have gone up, and we have permits and inspection. And what I did was try to break these out. So where we have the $600,000 that was kind of lumped together, I've broken it out a little bit further to see those costs broken out. The construction project management we know had come into play, I think, after the project started with MAC 5. And then we recently talked about, and Director Watt brought up, the furniture, fixtures, and equipment that will be needed once the building is in place. And we're not exactly sure what that cost is, but $200,000 as a placeholder is probably reasonable. And then we have legal counsel costs, because we know that there's going to be associated legal costs with the building and closeout. And it's just wise to have some component in there for our legal review of the project. And then further, the costs related to the temporary fire station that mostly are now known, but also the relocation costs that continue, which are for the modular rental, the parking lot, the space that we lease for office storage space at the KPP CSD. So broken out those a little bit further, and then up the contingency, since we had been eating away at that with the change orders that we've encountered so far. And I think one thing that's important to note is that with the construction, with the current contractor, their bid was $5.5 million. And I know the next bid, I believe, was around $6 million. And I think even one of those was $6.5 million. So we're under, so far, at least what those next bids were. So maybe it's some indication that some of those things that other contractors had included might not have been in the original bid, not knowing the condition of the building, et cetera. So I've allowed project contingency of 550, which does bring us up to about 8.9 million overall. Now, the hope is that we don't need all of this additional contingency and that some of these other costs come in lower. Some of the project construction and project cost management that we've talked about might the activity might reduce as we head into springtime. Now, once we get into the interior more of the building, but we're not certain about that. So for right now, I've left those numbers kind of at the worst case so that we have a handle on what that could do to overall project costs and then the reserve impact that we'll look at later. And then the next page, I took everything in more detail. We've got, CWS is the construction and what we've encountered there. There's still some change order requests, of course, that are approved, but the $5.8 million is what's been approved at this point. We hope that all of that won't be necessary. And then, you know, the various inspection and testing firm permit fees that we've had to pay to the county. And then other, we did some inspection safety audit testing of the site because we thought that that would be a responsible thing to do. And then Bill has helped with the project. He hasn't had a chance to do as much lately, so we may not be utilizing his services, but he's certainly there if I need to clarify anything. He's got great historical knowledge of the project. And Mac 5 is the construction manager. And then Marjang, her Marjang firm as the architect design team. And this includes subcontractors for geotechnical engineering and structural engineering. And then we did include the legal services that I talked about earlier. And there's just been some various engineering costs. This is everything that we had paid to date or approved to date. And then allows for what we know will potentially continue through the rest of the project. And then all of the costs are broken out further related to the temporary station with getting it into place and getting appliances and all the construction related to putting it up. And then the parking lot rental and all the systems that went into getting that functioning as well, the door, et cetera, HVAC systems. So this one goes through what we have paid and then what we have the potential left remaining. And so it kind of feeds into the kind of condensed version of the public safety budget proposal here. So this one, I would be looking for feedback, any additional information that the committee might need, and then would be looking for the committee to give me the go-ahead to advance this to the board of directors for approval so that they can take a look at the overall project budget revision and approve it as well.
So this, both pages are super helpful. I just had a few questions before we dive into a deeper discussion. On the temporary fire station, the unbudgeted $221,566 for relocation, including storage and sublet. What is that again?
So what I've done, and it probably does make it look a little confusing. What I've done here is, so for instance, that $300,000 was for relocation and fixtures and equipment for the temporary temporary station and storage related to it. And so I broke that out specifically to relocation. And then the construction cost is really where some of the systems related to getting that into place were, but furniture fixtures and equipment that have to do with the public safety building, I've listed up here. So I've kind of broken things out differently.
Okay.
So that could be what's causing a little bit of the confusion. And then the more detailed version of what's in that is down in here in the relocation category that we had right here. So vehicle system, long-term storage, trash pickup, project management, the admin subset, in the detail. And it's the bottom third of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was easy. All right, and I did have a question, which I now see the answer, whether there were any outstanding change orders that had not been approved. And it looks like there's a pretty good chunk.
Those
127.
That's what has been approved and not, has been requested and not approved. And we're hoping that that won't come to be, but we're allowing for contingency for that.
Okay, all right. So that would add another, okay. What I basically noticed If you go to the line above the project contingency allowance in the budget, it looks like taking the contingency out of it. Am I correct in observing that we've really added $1,243,000 to the budget rather than, because if you reduce the contingency from 720 to 550, it makes it, and then you look at the bottom line, there's not as much of a difference between the budget, the original budget, and the budget as of June 30th. But if you go above the contingency, which is just an estimate, and you look at the line items, it looks like we're about $1.25 million over budget.
Yeah, and I can see that. But what's happened with a lot of this initial project contingency is that it did end up getting used with the construction change orders. So it really kind of went above where it had started out here. And so that's why, you know, I'm hoping that we won't need that much contingency because we have used some of it to deal with these unforeseen conditions. But if the contingency remained the same, it would be closer to $1 million, which is kind of the bottom line, $1,050,075.
So in my head, I've just been thinking that this project has cost about $1 million more than was budgeted. And so it looks like I'm in my head, like if I run into someone on the street and say that, it's pretty accurate.
And I think too, it's important. I mean, because I was talking with someone recently, and it's important that they're aware that project budget is not just the construction of the building, that it's everything that goes with being relocated out of it and having temporary space. So I think it's important at least to know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cost a lot more than originally anticipated. I think some time back, I can't recall that we, you know, originally we're looking at this project and it seemed like it was going to cost a lot. And from the original project budget, it looks like we were able to reduce it a little bit, but some of these things that come up that we just weren't planning for or prepared for, it's just cost more. So we're continuing to monitor it, and we're going to hope that all that contingency is not needed.
Jim, did you mean that you looked at this super carefully?
Yeah, we had a discussion beforehand, so several of my questions have been answered. But the way I basically look at it is we started out with a project, a total project, including relocation costs, was going to be a shade under $8 million. And what we're looking at here on page 24 is that, hopefully, worst case scenario, we could come in at about $1 million over that. Of course, we don't need to go there. I have to throw it out because I've been bothered from this from the very beginning. Try not to ever bring this up again. But this project has actually exceeded the amount that's allowed under the Alcrest-Friola Act. I mean, we theoretically should not be allowed to do what it is that we are doing. Any construction costs in excess of 50% of the replacement cost of this building is not allowed. And we, in my opinion, we are so far above that 50%. I think we could have built a whole new building for the kind of money that we're talking about now. So I've said it, I don't want to say it again, but it's basically the reason I'm sitting on this council position or board position right now, because I was so frustrated with how much it was going to cost us when the original purpose of this project was to bring the building up to better seismic safety conditions for our fire and emergency services. Okay, I've gotten that off my chest now. I'll try not to mention it again. Let's go over to the page 25. What can you tell me about these Is it here? Takes me just a second. There's this. The second one down is applied materials engineering. And we have paid applied materials engineering $33,700 so far on a original estimate. I don't know where this $79,000 comes from. I remember a month or two or three back that these firms were being brought in to oversee certain aspects of the construction and to make sure that it met all of the required permits. But aren't we now past that? And I guess my question is, why is there more work required of a company like Applied Materials? Maybe you can explain.
So as far as the inspection and testing, we beefed up inspection and testing of the facility to ensure that it's up to code and that things are done correctly. And so I don't know that we'll end up with the $79,000. Several of the contractors had estimated based on what the project activity has been. And in recent months, it's been a little bit less, so it could be a lower total estimate in the end, but that allows for the way they see it, the number of inspection and testing that they need to do. They've done a lot with the concrete pours and testing, all of that. And as far as once we get internal, I'm not exactly sure what they're going to be testing, but it'll be more structural in nature. So that's, if I need to get more information on that, I can certainly bring that up for you, or I can report it at the board next.
Okay. And maybe you can explain, because you already have, in our private session, you talked about it for the benefit of rest. Another big cost item is margin. And I found that rather surprising, but you told me it.
Yes.
Seems like it's what we're going to have to pay.
Yeah.
But we have an architect that we paid a significant amount of money for to provide the architectural drawings that were submitted to the county and approved. And we are now paying that architect significantly more money to follow the construction of this project through to completion. Explain to our group why it is we have to be. Why is it that our architect has so much additional work apparently still in front of them before they have completed this project?
So the cost for marging includes subcontractors. So this also includes the geotechnical engineers, the some of the structural engineers. And so what we've had are things that come up and we need assistance from the geotechnical engineers who are part of this increased cost for marging. We had some water seepage that we needed them to take a look at the reasons for that. And a lot of it was rain, and there was some that was to be expected and some for other reasons. So those kinds of things come up as certain phases of the building construction continue. And so those various partners that are part of marging but are subcontractors continue to do work. In one of my recent communications with Marjane, her estimate, she feels might be a little bit high given now that the activity is a little bit less, because they all looked at it based on the kind of increased activity that we had when they were really working on the exterior and some of the, you know, submittals and things that they had to clarify and back and forth with the contractor. And so those are the kind of things that she continues to follow up on related to design is, you know, how something is supposed to be structured when there's kind of a slope because of the age of the building. So when we communicated recently, she thought she might end up lower than her outside estimate, and the others, I would imagine, might as well. So that's the hope, is that we won't need all of that, but it's budgeted just in the event that the activity continues as it has been.
Yeah, things that we've already talked about, but let's put them out there for the public. My, as I mentioned to you in our private session, it was my understanding that when we entered into this contract, the contractor was originally planning to basically turn over the building in January of next year. And then it got moved to March. And it's my understanding in my conversation with you now that building may not be completed until May. And since there's been delays, who knows? Could be a little bit longer. And I also understand that critically important to this contractor is that he has that building fully enclosed before the rainy season starts. And the rainy season could start in a month or two. And if you've driven by that building, it's still pretty bare. They're just starting to get some roof up on top of it. But so I just want to point out that there's the potential here for concerns, particularly if we have another winter like we had last year.
Yeah.
And then there's also the concern that just things happen and things slow down. So that too could be adding to the cost, because with each added month, it's not just the contractor, but it's all of our consultants that get carried on with those costs.
Well, and the temporary, they have to stay longer at the temporary station too.
Right? And yes, and all those costs too. Now I'm getting to the other part that we didn't talk about, which is, if we are now talking, so let's just assume that that's probably the best data we have right now, that in the end of May, we will receive the building completed by the contractor. What actually does the May date mean? I assume it means what I just said, that the contractor has now completed the contractor's work. But of course, there is still work over and above what is contained in that contract, fixture and equipment to get everything. And we've got a lot of new work that we have, new fixtures and equipment that have to go upstairs, just where the living quarters are. And how long is that going to drag on? Because until all of that is done, and only when all of that is done, can we actually remove ourselves from these temporary locations where we're currently located.
So we'll be having project team meetings to talk about what the schedule will look like near the end. Probably not quite yet, but we'll start kind of strategizing on that so we have a handle on how long it's going to take, especially once we get the schedule changes each month. And just kind of as an update, we get projected schedules each month with the contractor billing that the construction manager reviews in detail, and they go back and forth on the any kind of an extension. I think maybe the last one or the one before, they were able to make up a few days. So it's possible that could be a good scenario where we actually do that. But as we get a little bit closer, we'll be kind of going through what the timeline looks like after turnover of the building. I'm not sure if they had done that originally, but we'll make sure that we have a schedule that we can provide so we have an estimate on how long it'll take to how long we estimate it will take us from the turnover of the building to get back actually into it.
Okay.
All right. That's pretty much what I have for this week.
I had a related question, and I think you mostly answered it, but sort of just very specifically, what is, for the purposes of meeting the loan requirements, and I think the drop dead date in the contract now for finishing is September 2024. Like, what is the actual, what criteria does the bank use for basically signing off that they agree we finished on time?
So my understanding would be, and I want to confirm it, because I don't believe it would be moving into the building. It should be notice of completion, because that's essentially when the building is complete, we file a notice of completion, and then that is where we actually take ownership back, or take, you know, possession back, occupancy back of the building. So I'll confirm which with what triggers that, but I would say it's notice of completion that would then get filed through the board, and then it gets filed through the county.
Who does that come from? Does that come from the contractor, or from the county inspector?
I think that that comes through our construction manager. Yeah, because we fill it out and file it with the county. So I'm not sure if it starts with the contractor, but I know that in the past when I worked on these, they come through the construction manager and then engineers. So it'll either be through the construction manager or start with the contractor, because I think the contractor has part to fill out, and then we have kind of a resolution of things to complete on our end.
Okay.
In the event that we didn't make September, that we would be in deep trouble. I don't think so.
I don't want to go there. I think when I spoke with council about what that actually means, I think, and this is our bond council, it's really important that we do everything we can to make that target date.
Sure.
There are a lot of hoops, and I'm not really sure how easy they would be to jump through, and I hate hoops to have to do that. So we're just going to keep pushing to not put us in that position.
The weather last winter is documented as a almost act of God, honestly, event. I don't know if the contract, the loan contract contained anything, but I mean, that's the thing. All right. Well, what do you need from us? Basically, direction to advance this to the board.
Yeah. If there were any changes you wanted me to look at, I would do that. And then otherwise, I would take this to the board for their review of the potential adoption of the updated budget.
I'm the way it is.
Yes, I agree.
Let's see. We may have some public comment, I'm not sure.
I don't see any hands raised.
Okay, so our next item is the financial forecast update, item D, and that's on page 26.
Yes.
And are you giving that, or is Bill giving it?
Okay. So Bill had a conflicting meeting. He couldn't attend this meeting, but he reviewed the changes, and we just had a couple of changes that we made, and most of it was to increase the public safety building budget. But we have a few other changes that we incorporated to see how they would impact the financial forecast, and I'll just go over that in a second. But the changes, we updated revenues to the June 30th actuals, which were the property tax revenues increased a little bit above what we had originally had in there, some thousand, I think. And then the CERP disbursement, which we had the actual number, I think we had used an estimate of 80,000, and it ended up at 68,000, and that's a wash. So the next item that we updated is the retiree health benefits cost. So the CERP disbursement that we take out of the CERP trust funds the retiree health benefits. So those will be equal.
Right.
So they are also 68,000 in total between the three categories. And then the updates for audit, I put audit at 20,000. I just couldn't put it at 30,000 yet until I had a chance to go checking to see if we can get any audits that might be a little bit less than that. And so we'll have to revisit that if it doesn't work out. The fire safe planting grant money, we had 25,000 in the prior budget. None of it was used, and that was something that the board had determined to do, and we did not add it into the current budget, not realizing that it wasn't used last year, but that the community residents and then the emergency preparedness committee were really looking for that to be included in the budget. That's $25,000 that we added, and if we want to discuss that, we can do that as well. And then the public safety building project budget update. So the changes I went through are original and highlighted. Version doesn't show up. Oh, there it is. Good. Okay. So where the changes were, and I just need to move this one. More. The increase for the property tax revenues to 5.2, the 67,600,000 for the service disbursement, and then the corresponding benefits. The audit that we put at 20,000 for the time being until we find out what that's going to look like. This one, we had already talked about this and incorporated into the budget the $10,000 for water system improvements, which would potentially be hydrants that we determined to keep in the budget. So we added that here in the financial plan because we had had that talk after the last financial plan. And then the fire safe planting grants, I just put it in this year. We didn't put it out further until we had that discussion as to if we should just include that each year. But we've included it for the this year, which would go into the final budget for board adoption at the September meeting. And then the public safety building, kind of splitting the costs out here to coordinate with the updated revised budget. I put the kind of a $500,000 out here. This is in the fiscal year 24-25, because this is 22-23, where we would assume to be moving in and most of the construction costs would be done. And this would just be any follow-on costs that happen in the July 1st timeframe of 2024. And so once we make that change, those changes, then we go to the fund balance projection. So how does that affect our long-term planning? So the changes are automatically incorporated into the budget. So So the revenues for, we didn't touch the 23-24 budget revenues. And then the operating budget, the public safety building budget, then would be updated from the additional costs that we put. We have that broken into two places because we have funds within the general fund that we're paying, and then capital project fund that we're paying. And then using the capital project fund, we leave that $1 million reserve for rolling stock. So we have that as the ending fund balance in capital, we leave that there. And then the remaining funds would be operating. So when you take a look at the years are over here on the left, where does that put us going out into the future? And we've got this through 27-28. So in 27-28, it shows us with a general fund of 3.8 million and then 2 million for that rolling stock, which is what it would build to if we continue to build it at the current rate, that would then coincide with what we anticipate needing to purchase. So when we look at that, and I think this might show it a little bit better. When we look at across the year. So this is the budget for 2024. And then these are the projected going out for the five-year financial plan. So when we take a look as we get out further, we notice that the change in fund balance then starts to decrease rather than adding to it. And a couple of these years we have that the change in fund balance is negative, and that's for the project. But these then would more so be related to operating costs. So we know that the El Cerrito contract we have escalating, I think we put 7%. And then our property taxes, we have an estimate of 4%. So at some point, they're going to make that difference is going to narrow down and put pressure on the operating budget. So this is the point at which we kind of take a look at what we're spending to see If that's an issue, if we want to take a look at anything, it's nothing that we need to do anything about right now, but it would be good just to know that we can weather that, or that, you know, as the years progress, we might end up with the El Cerrito contract not increasing at quite that rate, and we might have property taxes that increase at a higher rate. But we just want to be prepared, which is what the five-year plan helps us do, is, you know, is there anything that we want to take a look at kind of revamping? But like I said, we don't need to do that now. We've got time. It's just something that we could look at in the future. What I started looking at were some potential grant opportunities. We've been looking at that with the Emergency Preparedness Committee, but there's some others that I just started exploring to see if we could get any additional financial help, which would be really nice, some grant funding for preparedness or other activities. So we'll be exploring that. So this is to review the financial forecast, to give you, you know, what does it do to the long term, and then answer any questions. And then once we have any potential updates, then I would take it to the board for their review and approval. So any questions or comments or things you want to take a look at?
You did make the comment that we are assuming a rather large increase annually in our El Cerrito contract costs compared to a smaller increase in our property tax revenues. And historically, that would not appear to be reasonable. However, and I understand this is a projection, and we have the right to change it going forward. I happen to think, though, that it's actually a fairly realistic set of assumptions this time. There's still talk that we could be heading into a recession. A recession certainly could affect even our property taxes and certainly the increase in the cost of buying homes these days has affected those sale properties. And all of that is potentially going to lower what we have been getting every year, which is about a 5% return increase in our property taxes, to something less than that. We have had years where we've actually had negative returns. So it's not impossible that it couldn't even go negative. As for El Cerrito costs, which constitute the bulk of our expenditures, while they have not averaged 8%, that was because we've had some fairly decent years in terms of what it was going to cost us for these El Cerrito services. But those costs could be increased if, in fact, there's going to be increased cost to pay down their CalPERS requirements. And that's what concerns me about El Cerrito. El Cerrito has a very high unfunded remaining balance with CalPERS. And if CalPERS cost cannot achieve the cost that they expect to achieve, which is 6.8%, and this year they only achieved 5.8%, and the year before that, expect to see some rather significant increase. I just want to point out that I personally think that while it may look to many people like we're being very pessimistic in terms of how much it's going to cost us versus revenues coming in, I think that we should be concerned about it. That's all I want to say. I just want to say that I think that this is a good, and I like this five-year forecast projection. I have my main question for you is this. At the end of the year, at the end of 2024, when we have completed, presumably, the cost of this public safety building, How much money can we realistically assume that we will have in available reserves to do other things?
So if we go to our fund balance page. Okay, so at the end of the fiscal year 23-24, we've got $5.5 million showing with the rolling stock reserve here. And then the $4.4 million in operating, with about $2 million being the set aside for the El Cerrito contract. So the remaining $2.4 million would be available, but cautiously optimistically.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that is something that I'd like to, if there's a way, maybe even just for the current year, mm-hmm. to show that more transparently, because, there's numbers look like, man, the way I process these kinds of things is just to sit down and calculator and write it all out for myself. So, you know, I took the current year and budget where we project the fund balance to be $5,531,384, just as an example, because every year, you know, there's a $100,000-$200,000 difference. But so yes, we have $4,455,578 as our ending operating or general fund, separate from the capital fund. But when you take out the current amount that we'd be required to have for 6 months of the El Cerrito contract, which comes out of that that chunk, the rolling stock is separate. But if add the rolling stock in, but take out that $2,073,000, then what we really, in theory, have to play with is $3,457,900. But it wasn't more than just two short years ago that we were required to keep the full 12 months of the El Cerrito contract on reserve. And somewhere I heard that El Cerrito's expecting us to get back up to that level, but I don't think we've seen it officially. But just if we did get back up to that level, just in the current year picture, then that would only leave us with $308,610, which isn't a lot, because you have to consider operations and we need to have management. We need to do audits. So I think that this is some better, even just for the current year, maybe not for every year, but for the benefit of the rest of the board and for the public when they look at this, to see that these big numbers floating out here, some of it is contractually obligated right now. And then there's the reserve fund discussion that I think we need to have.
We can break that up further.
We had a conversation before the meeting started about the fact that these numbers are based upon June 30th day. And June 30th is when we have the largest amount of cash reserves. And we don't get money back from the county until December. So we're going to go for another 6 months with no more revenue coming in. So these numbers, if we were actually doing this on a calendar year, this number would be a lot less than $5 million.
But I get what you're saying on the fluctuation of the cash flow, but this is the budget view, right? Not the cash flow.
Right.
It's the cash flow that dips.
Yeah.
But
and that
the
would
long
be more
view, the budget.
Show that as you get closer to waiting for that next payment, it would show you as decreased reserves that would then go back up once you have your profit.
But I think Bill Zanoni did have, at the board meeting when he appeared? He did have a cash flow at some point. I mean, I think your point is, Jim, you need to have that cushion for when you're at your lowest cash flow of the year, even though you're going to get some big infusion later that's going to sort of make up for it. It's like all of our bank accounts. If we only got paid twice a year, we need to know what is that amount that's going to pay our mortgage every month until we get paid the second time. And I'm not, I think Bill did that, but I don't remember what that figure is.
Okay.
As a minimum amount that we need to keep, pay the bills in between infusions from the county.
That would be a good one to include when we take it back to the board, probably in September.
Question related to that. I don't know if I have the correct understanding about this, so it's just a perception that I have, or else I heard it somewhere. Because of this fact that the county only deposits money for us twice a year, if we were, let's say, October or November, for example, or whatever, whenever we're at our lowest and waiting for our next infusion from the county, if we were to overspend our actual cash on deposit with the county while waiting for the next infusion, do they backstop us on that? I mean, they don't refuse to pay our bills, do they?
Right. And I don't know the exact language related to that, but I have been told that I don't think we've run into that position, at least since I've been here, but they do, when you're an agency that participates and the property taxes come through them, that they do continue to pay bills knowing that that money's coming in. I think that was a conversation I had with the KPPCSD related to theirs. And I don't know what the specific language is that the county has in place, but my understanding is that they would continue to fulfill payments up to that amount.
I mean, isn't that one of the benefits of keeping our money, keeping our operations, if you will? We've got the checking account on the side, which I think has proven very useful, but keeping the bulk of our funding with the county, that provides... It's like a credit card.
A little bit, especially if you get down on your reserves to lower. Yeah, that would be a benefit.
But Mary, based upon these numbers here, how much money do you think we will have at the end of 2024 for other things?
I think it's this.
Well, it would really be the amount that...
This is the fund balance, 5.5. Subtract out half of the El Cerrito contract, that's 3.4. Then the rolling stock is set aside, so that's 2.3. And then it's going to be a question of what's our reserve policy going to look like for that 2.38. What's our reserve policy going to look like? Because right now,
it's 2.3.
Right, our current reserve policy, it's in there. It's pretty slim.
Yeah.
I think we could spend that full. No, the current reserve policy sets aside a year of the El Cerrito contract.
But by contract, that was changed.
Yeah, so I don't know which overrides it, but either way, we just have to figure this out as a board.
Yeah.
But if we went by our reserve policy, we'd only have 300,000 to play with.
There's a big difference in it. That's why I'm asking you. I think for me that this is pretty important. We need a budget for fiscal year 2023-2024. We need to know how much money we will have at the end of 2024 to do other things during that year's time. We had a meeting last time where we talked about the possibility of setting up these alarm systems around Kensington. Do we have the money to do that? I don't know. Yeah, well, probably to do that if it's only going to cost $400,000 or $500,000.
Yeah, I don't even know.
But I don't
know. Exactly. And maybe there's grant funding for something.
Maybe there's, yeah. But isn't this an important thing to know? How much money do we have to spend for the rest of this year on other things like those alarm systems?
I think if we could maybe just have I mean, this is how mine looks. Just for 1 year, not for the full 5 years, because it's so similar as you go year to year, plus minus small percentages, but just some kind of breakout for just the current year.
Yeah.
Is people kind of, I used to get confused about where do you find that El Cerrito contract reserve until you came on board and you laid it out that one time very clearly.
So we'll update it so that it's easier to see.
The rolling stock schedule looks great. It's super transparent. I mean, this is all very transparent. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the distinction between
what's available.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. See that too.
And I don't know if this is the right place, but just to say, personally, I have no problem adding in that planting grant budget.
Okay.
But between both the water, I mean, I think we all know that you have the budgetary discretion to do that. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's fine if the board approves it. But what kind of concerns me is, it's not a concern, it's an observation. We have no operational plan to spend these monies. Mm-hmm. We talked about it in June that, yeah, that $10,000 is there for the water improvements. They've been opening up the pavement all over Kensington all summer. But I don't think anybody was in there looking at the opportunity for a water system improvement. And so similarly, I know that we need an operational plan for the award the planning grants.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd put more money in planning grants if we had a good, solid operational plan, because I think vegetation management is so critical to fire prevention.
Yeah, we can drop that up. I'm not sure. I know we have an old form, I think, but I'm not sure what narrative went along with it, but we can do that.
Well, we could either say this for the board meeting. I'll keep it super short. We used to have a program when Diablo Fire Safe Council was taking contributions. We would like for removal, not replanting. And then we would match Diablo Fire Safe's what they raised on their own. But that would do the removal part.
Mm-hmm.
And then the replanting part, we managed on our own. Like once you went through and had your juniper or whatever it was removed, then they could apply to us for the replanting. So now I'm not sure how replanting sort of stands alone.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it needs to be coupled with evidence of having removed something. That's all I'm going to really say about it, because it's not really on this agenda. But so let's see if we have any. I guess with just from my perspective, mm-hmm. this is very helpful. And with the one
update,
maybe that goes more with the budget, just to sort of break out what a typical year looks like.
And we can do it on the financial forecast too, because it'll be helpful to break that out.
But I'm fine advancing this to the board.
Yes.
Are there any public comments on the item D?
Does it look like any hands
financial forecast? Great. So we now move on to, and I know we need to watch the time.
Yeah.
We're probably doing okay. We need to be out of here by about 2:15, would you say?
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if Jenny, by 2.
Okay.
It'll be okay.
All righty. So now we are on item 5E, which is the budget. I probably covered a lot of that discussion.
Yeah. For the most part, what that does, and it's kind of just a reiteration of the updates that were made to the financial forecast, and the changes that we just discussed with property tax, CERT, disbursement, and retiree health costs, the audit, fire safe planting grants, and the public safety bonus. So those were all incorporated and then put into the budget document itself. Which just means updating a handful of the tables, because a lot of the narrative stays the same. So it's just with the numbers tables that get updated, which later in the document here, that would come. Then these tables come exactly from the financial forecast, which is really helpful. That way they stay in sync and they're just copy pasted into this document. So that's the full still show ending fund balance for the year, the 5.5 million. So that's the change to the budget. This would be the final budget that gets adopted by the board at the September meeting for fiscal year 23-24.
I think it's perfect with maybe just the addition of one more small table to break out of the operating portion of the fund balance.
Yeah.
Includes the El Cerrito contract.
Yeah. So we have, we have the rolling stock, so we can break out the other similarly or as part of the maybe here. This part of the document, but we'll break it out.
I just think the overall presentation of the budget is extremely informative. So I really thank you for the narrative and all the work that you put into that. I think it serves lots of purposes.
That's helpful.
Definitely.
And we can definitely add as we go along if you have any other areas that would be helpful for people to find information in the budget document, we can add.
And the org chart, I think it's important for people to remember right now that as an independent special district, fire district, the fire chief reports directly to the board as opposed to maybe other models. KPPCSD, the police chief, reports to the general manager board. So I think it's a real benefit that the fire chief reports to the board and we see that. So
it would be if there are any changes that you want me to look at incorporating or just the committee reviewed it and recommended to submit this to the board for adoption.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
See if there's any public comment.
No, I do not see any.
All right, then. Perfect. So now we are on to
reserves policy.
Okay, very good. So to just balance the time between the reserves policy and then item G, district policy updates, I didn't get all the way through all of this. What are the items in the district policy update?
So the district policy updates, they're anything that's finance related. So there's a number of policies that have financial limits in them. A lot of them are fine. Some of them I think could use updating or inclusion. We don't have a purchasing policy separate from budget, which would potentially allow us to do any kind of cooperative purchasing. We talked about recently the potential for looking at utilizing other agencies' contracts, and we don't have that specifically listed. And the CSDA has a separate purchasing policy. So it's those kind of things, taking a look at purchasing policy and then some employment-related policies that we should probably have that we don't have spelled out because back when we had policies, we had one general manager, one staff person, and a contract that was then all part of the policies themselves. So what I need to really do is take a look at the policies overall and kind of split out what's policy and what's really more procedural so that if we have something that needs to be updated procedurally, we don't have to go through the first and second reading with the policy level discussion. We have a lot of kind of myths that we can separate out certain things to make it a little bit easier. So with the other policy updates, it's just kind of to let you know this is the process I'm going through, but no action is needed. It's just showing you what those policies are, and I kind of highlighted which ones.
So we could do the reserves first and then do that one. I was trying to figure out whether we needed much time for...
I think the other one is kind of just telling you what my plan is right now and not really action, but feedback if you... So the reserves, I think we could get through.
All right. Why don't you walk us through
Okay.
Reserves.
So we've been talking about the reserves policy and the fact that it's pretty slim right now. It's just, I think, got two paragraphs. Not a lot of information is included. So this is the current reserves, just that we'll establish a reserve account. This has the 12 months of the El Cerrito contract, but that was changed by contract. I know that they looked at updating the policy maybe last year, but that wasn't fully completed. So this is the current one that's in place. And then the capital reserves account for equipment and rolling stock as we have. So what I tried to do was to look at sample policies, which once we talked with the board, they had wanted to be able to see sample policies from other agencies, which I included later in this document and can kind of go through. But what I did was put a red line together with information that I thought would be helpful. And it just kind of spells it out more as far as how we're maintaining funds and the fact that it's just kind of a hierarchy of funds that goes into describing something we talked about during the audit, which is the assigned versus committed versus non-spendable versus restricted and assigned. So we can kind of get to an understanding of what those different categories are, so we know what falls where. And then to go on to talk about what the reserve the fund accounts and balances are and how they'll be established. And this just really goes into the policy level. How would it go about being established, which is by the board through adoption of the policy. Some agencies have codified by resolution, and we can do that. And that any kind of changes in fund balances would be require action of the board. So this just really spells the policy out further, puts more detail that seemed to be used by other agencies and then partly by the California special districts. And then where we get to amounts, just kind of updating. I took an initial stab at what we have as the El Cerrito contract balance, which, you know, it lists that the reserve is for 12 months. But however, in May, a contract amendment reduced it to a period of 6 months. And so it would just be, do we want anything to, because we've talked about building that back up to 12 months or maybe building it up somewhat or leaving it at the 6 months. So that's up for discussion, and then kind of spelling out the vehicle replacement reserve, the rolling stock that we have. We talked about building maintenance, and for right now, I just listed that we would establish some reserve for future maintenance, but we don't know what those are yet, so we could establish what that amount would be later. And then the building improvements and renovation is the current public safety building budget, which we anticipate being done in fiscal year 2024. And then just such other amounts as the board deems prudent. And then, and just a statement here that the reserve funds don't need to be maintained in some separate account, bank account. They can be pooled for investment purposes. We just separate them out for accounting purposes and report on them that way.
I think that's a good thing to put in here for transparency and clarity. Because I always wondered about that myself. Yeah. Do the reserves have to be more liquid, or some reserves have to be more liquid than others? So, yeah.
So we're authorized, unless it's some sort of a trust fund like the CERT. We're authorized to be able to include those in district overall funds. So this was just, like I said, a first kind of draft, and I took it from, the reserve policy right here is the California Special Districts. And so some of that language actually came from their listing on a draft sample policy. And then they actually went into a lot more detail that I really didn't go into on utilizing reserve funds, because I think I described how they could be used. So their policy got to be a lot longer. And then Miranda Moraga, Orinda, they have theirs spelled out kind of like I had discussed with the non-spendable, restricted, committed, assigned. So I hope that that would be helpful to include. And they have other categories, budget deficit and things to include that I don't think we need to do in our policy, at least my recommendation. And then what the city of Berkeley has, I just got a sampling of documents so that when we review it here or when we take it to the board, if they have any components that maybe I didn't include that they would like to take a look at including. And then, you know, some people have charts and things that so there's a couple of different policies that I kind of took pieces from to draft a first one.
I'm just getting through. I didn't have a chance to read all these. I ran into a really interesting article the other day in the Marin IJ. And it was related to Ross and their renovation. Aren't they going to renovate their fire stations? And they have like three fire stations in the contracted area. Trying to get here, but I didn't get all the way through the article, but I saw a lot of similarities in terms of like size and two communities sharing contracted fire services and the decision-making process. If one of the stations needs to be upgraded, who should pay for it? There's something very interesting that they needed unanimous, Ross Valley Fire, they needed unanimous approval of the board to renovate their fire station, to use their reserve funds to renovate the fire station. And I thought that was really fascinating. But just given, I thought that Ross Valley might be another comparable one to just maybe look at their reserves. If you have a chance to add that to the reference material, I had wanted to go to it myself and read about it. But I didn't get there yet.
I can add that and see if there's any other parts to kind of incorporate.
Ross Valley Fire Stations, yeah. Consolidated agency. Ross Valley Fire Department is a consolidated agency serving Ross, San Anselmo, Sleepy Hollow, and Fairfax. So, anyway, but they have a JPA. Use of any reserve funds above 3% of the operating budget requires a unanimous vote of the board. I thought that was interesting. But I think it's going to take us a little while to even get to something to vote on. But I would sort of feel like a goal of the first presentation is just to get people's feedback on it.
At the board level?
Okay. Yeah. And kind of explain the impact on our reserves of going back to 12 months for the El Cerrito contract.
Yeah, that's a discussion topic.
It would definitely
Over time, graduated increase. But also, like, let's say we still had the 12 months for the year that ends in June, that would only leave us 308,000. And then the question is finished going to mean we're not going to still find things wrong? I mean, I don't know how, if it ever happens that someone turns over a building and then you start using it, and then it's like, well, everything that you drafted makes sense to me, Mary. And 1170.01 in these four categories, five categories. These are the ones that I think the audit, the auditor said it's board action that basically determines what goes into those categories. So would this, if we adopted, if we started moving toward adopting this framework, then would these assignments, commitments, et cetera, would they be reviewed and made annually as part of the budget process? Yep. How does that get operational?
Yeah, I mean, most of the time, I don't know that agencies do that. It's part of their budget, and that's audit, and that's where they see it. I don't know that they discuss it during budget. I haven't had any other agencies do that, but we can certainly review it to see what it would look like for purposes of, you know, what falls into that category, and at least to help explain what's in those categories. But yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, very good.
Public comment on the reserve, post reserve policy, and our recommendation that we just have a first discussion that's, I would say, not necessarily a first reading,
no,
but just get people's
feedback on anything that I drafted and then any of the other samples that we include.
Sorry, I'm seeing any public comment. Okay, let's see, on to.
So, yeah, the policies, there's, like I said, there's, it's a project a little bit with the policies to get them into a format that kind of follows more of other agencies and the CSDA samples. It's like, get there.
Page 75 of the packet.
Okay. Okay, so once I looked at the reserves policy, there's just a number of policies that I said are really policies, but a mixture of operating procedures. And because of the, you know, first reading, second reading, board action that it takes, it'd really be good to get those separated into what's truly policy and what's really operating procedures, manual processes. So really, this is just what my process is to identify which are policies in nature, which are operating procedures, and to kind of lay that out and present it to the board. And then to go through and kind of plan the flow of the policy manual, kind of change from what it looks like now to what it would look like as far as what policies go where and which ones will be. If the operations manual, I wouldn't really have that. If it's a board policy, it'll be an board policy, or if it's an employment related one, it'll be in an employee manual handbook. But the operations, we want to get any policies out of it and just have that as kind of an operating document. And then going through and collecting any sample policies so that we can take a look at that, present any draft one policies that have a financial component to the finance committee, and then present a draft of policies that would be updated to the board for feedback or for first reading once we get to that point. But it's just to, this one's just to really describe the process that it's going to take to kind of review them. There were a couple that I wanted to consider including sooner rather than later, which was the purchasing policy. The CSBA has one separately, I think, attached. So I listed out, I highlighted which of the district's policies have a financial component just for reference. But then went through some agencies, and I think I included, some have a really detailed bidding process in their policy. I don't really feel like we need an 8-page document, but I would like to see us have something along the lines of, that's a compensation letter, the CSDA, hopefully I get through there. Last one. Okay. So the CSDA has a 1-page policy on purchasing, and it just kind of conveys the limits. And then this is kind of the one that I consider kind of a cooperative purchasing part of the policy, which they talk about purchasing vehicles off the state purchasing state vehicle procurement program. A lot of agencies adopt that. And it's kind of a cooperative purchasing where the state goes out and competitively bids those, and other agencies can use that competitive bidding to purchase their vehicles. So what I would look at including is the potential for, if there are other agencies around, like the county or some larger agency, city, that goes out to bid for something, that we would be able to potentially utilize their bidding process as having gone through a competitive process, meaning we don't have to reinvent the wheel if we're purchasing something that another agency has done. So
I would just a lot of sense.
So I would just include language like that, because we don't have anything that has that kind of language right now. So it would just be to spell that out a little bit.
Yeah, so it's kind of a common sense concept that people don't necessarily think about, but when you put it in your policy,
And it wouldn't mean that we'd have to, but it would mean that it would give us that option. It's one thing that we look at when we go to purchase something.
We have that at the university where there's just this big clearinghouse for if you need paper, if you need this, if you need that. The university's already done the bidding process on everything. So you know that if you buy it, this function, you just buy whatever you want because it's already been, you know, if you can afford it, but it's already been through either a bidding process or a negotiated costing. So I think this makes a lot of sense.
So I haven't gotten to drafting that one yet, but I think that I should prior to being able to go through all the policies, kind of revamp them. I think having this purchasing policy would be helpful sooner rather than later. And then some of the other policies that I identified, employee compensation and benefits and paid leaves. We don't have anything spelled out. And so I think it would be a good idea for us to, what we have right now is that agreement for the one former employee. So I think pulling that out, putting in just kind of standard language for what we would think for any employee. And of course it could be different by contract, but at least we'd have the basics of what any employment compensation benefits policies would be in general. So that's kind of my starting point. So this was really just for that discussion and to let me know if you see any flaws with that. Otherwise, I would just kind of proceed with my plan, and then it'll come back to finance and board as they're done, as they're available.
Yeah. I think it's great that you're doing this.
Yeah.
Long overdue.
I think I tried to tackle it a little bit.
it's interesting to work on, but it's sometimes hard to make it a priority with everything else. So what do you need? I just agree with you presenting it to the board like you.
So any that are financial in nature, the purchasing policy, I could probably, since I've told you what I'm going to be including, I could probably just take that to the board for their feedback, review, or potential first reading. But others that I start to draft up, you might want a finance meeting first to review them. I'll know more once I actually start digging into them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds good.
So nothing really needed. This was just for your feedback.
See if there's any.
I do not see any.
All right.
That was my last item.
Okay. So then you just have a question of future agenda items. Time for me at the moment. We can do it as the time comes on. What would be our projected next meeting? There's the mid-year budget review, but
that would meet
before
that. Yeah, that would be before that.
Yeah.
So maybe in October before that board meeting, or November. It just depends on
what you need to cover.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe I'll see where I get, and then we can kind of go from there. It might be nice to get some things done before February, but we'll just kind of see.
Well, maybe a lot.
Why did you pick February?
I think that's when we typically meet, February or March.
Oh.
Yeah, mid-year budget review.
So if you pick February, it seems to make a lot of sense to me. But you think maybe before then?
If I get some policies done, that would be helpful.
Oh.
Committee to review. Otherwise, then February would be.
When Donna and I were in the finance committee, we used to meet quarterly instead of twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
There were shorter meetings, mm-hmm. and then I don't know, there were always things to deal with.
Yeah. So I don't know if we want to look at establishing any dates or just kind of play it by ear for right now. But yeah, I would say kind of quarterly with a little shifting in dates.
Yeah.
And public safety building progress might dictate if there's a need for a meeting or something like that.
Yeah.
First, you see where the reins are. Where they are. Okay.
Okay.
All right, then. I think that we are ready to adjourn the meeting. It is 2:03, and the next meeting of the Kensington Fire Protection District Finance Committee will be held on a date to be listed on the district's website and posted at 3 public locations 72 hours prior to the meeting.
Thank you very much.